Hello, Vegas.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Coming at ya! Welcome to another edition of This in MMA, presented by the AMP Radio Network. And as you can tell by the sound of my voice, DJ Tony is not here today. He is taking a couple of personal days, and that's why I gave a little homage to him at the entrance there. That is his entrance music. However, the show must still go on, and I'm here, and I'm joined this lovely, sunny Sunday morning in most places of the world, and sunny afternoon in the East Coast by Mr. Ryan Moody. Let's bring him in now.
Well, as you mentioned, I am here. It is time to do a show. It's time to answer the bell, and that's what we do. Unless you're Matt Mitrione, right?
Boom, boom. Yeah, very good. I'm not as fast as Tony on the drops, so you'll all have to excuse me. He'll probably put them in when he edits. Okay, so basically, what we're going to do today on the show is have a recap of Bellator 172. It's going to be fairly short. Because as Ryan was saying before the bell rang here for the show, it wasn't a very exciting card. Hopefully, about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by at Lionheart Smith. He is a UFC middleweight. We're going to get him a little bit of an interview of him by me, and then maybe we'll get into some of the topics that came up or came out of Bellator 172. And as you just mentioned, Ryan, there is a couple. But before we get to that, and before we bring Anthony Smith in, let's get to this card last night. As we know, the card suffered a loss, let's say, if we could say that, a big loss by dropping out Fedor and Matt Mitrione. Due to some kind of maybe mysterious injury, right, Ryan? I mean, let's just touch on it real quickly. Kind of mysterious, right, at the last second?
Yeah, I mean, the 11th hour, truly. I mean, I think the prelims may have been started when this had actually came out, because Bellator is known for its very long prelims. So, interesting to me, you know, that he's now saying that he had kidney stones, and don't get me wrong, kidney stones are a painful thing, a horrible thing to go through. However, I do also know, you know, as long as they're not moving, you are going to traditionally be okay. And if this had been a problem, and kidney stones are prior diagnosed, it's not onset. It's not something that just happens, like a muscle tear or a traditional injury we would see in MMA. I'm surprised that he continued to go through all the lead-up, all the pressers, all the interviews, all the media. And this was never even questioned. I mean, if it was something that was going to prevent the fight, much less cause him to not be 100%, I would have expected it to have been mentioned prior to, oh, my God, right before the show, we need to go to the hospital. And then, obviously, we had the snafu, if you will, after Scott Coker announced this, his PR on Twitter puts out his after party. Then he has to go back, supposedly, and recant the tweet and apologize and say that he's really in the hospital. And we don't have things like this happen in MMA that frequently. I mean, this, I couldn't immediately think off the top of my head. I major cards. I know LFA went through one of these, or RFA, excuse me, went through one of these where a main event just didn't show the day of the fight, just, you know, went AWOL. But I can't think of a major televised fight through a well-known promotion and organization, no disrespect to RFA at the time, where a main card pulled this soon. I can't think of it. It's someone please correct me, because I would like to know that it's happened before. But this to me is a giant, no pun intended with Matt Mitrione, a giant black eye for Bellator. I mean, here's a company that's trying to just, you know, to tread water. And they've went through all these big build-up cards, whether you go back to Chael and Tito, and the cards just don't live up to it. And you can even go back to, you know, Shamrock and Gracie, or Dana and Kimbo, all these cards that just don't live up. you get the flat-out biggest name you've ever had. I mean, you know, no disrespect to Gracie, but Fedor is Fedor, okay? You get the biggest name you've ever had. You, for months, promote him coming back, and then this is what your UFC buddy just did to you on his, what, third fight with the organization?
Yeah.
It just, to me, doesn't bode well. I mean, it just doesn't bode well.
I know. I wanted you to save that rant for later, but that's okay.
Too late now. The cat's out of the bag.
It doesn't look very good. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to what ended up being the main event of this card, the lightweight main event between Patricky Pitbull and Josh Thompson. You know, because it's of where the fight was held, I think this card probably still drew a lot at the box office. But let's get your thoughts on the fight, and then we'll move on to that.
Honestly, I mean, you watch the card, and I did watch the whole card after this announcement, and it was just something, it was hard to capture your attention. I actually thought one of the most strange things about this card is we've had 2 or 3 weeks of UFC with three-man booths with the removal of Goldie. In Bellator this week, they elected to bring in Chael Sonnen to do a three-man booth. Now, maybe that's just for the scale of what this Fedor-Mitrione fight was going to be. I don't know. But there wasn't a lot of chemistry between them. And to me, it made the whole show very disjointed. As a matter of fact, in what became the main event, Chael did not know how Thompson had gotten knocked out. And during the entire course of the end of the fight, during the entire course of the replays, because of where they were positioned, Chael kept saying, "I don't know what happened. You know, it looks like he hit his head on his neck when he shot for a takedown and fell down." I think Patricky Pitbull is a great fighter. I really do. I think he's probably one of the stars of Bellator, probably one of the people they could really build their name on. The issue that I have kind of underwriting all of this is, rather than try to build those people up, rather than try to make your own commodities, if you will, and your own fighters, it seems like their intent to sign free agents or bigger draws or whoever, you know, however you want to say it, and then inject them in the main events. And when you do that, this is what you have. You have a card where, you know, Josh Koscheck was the lead-in on TV getting knocked out. You've got Brooke Mayo, who I guarantee you 80% of the MMA community doesn't really know all that well, as your second card. You really aren't giving yourself an opportunity to build your brand. And I would imagine a majority of people, once this main event was canceled, elected to just not watch. And that, to me, is probably the biggest story that's going to come out of this. What is the damage to Bellator? I mean, yes, Czech Congo had an incredible fight. Czech Congo had a dominant fight, one of the more dominant fights I've seen in a very long time. It was a personal fight going up against, I believe, a friend of his, if not somebody he definitely used to train with. You know, these are fights that in Bellator's world will have meaning and impact. But obviously the reason no one's going to care or watch is it's overshadowed by what actually happened.
Yeah. I think you're correct in what you said, that, you know, a lot of people, once this fight dropped off, because the excitement was for Fedor's return in the United States of America. And when what happened at the press conference afterwards, and I know, Modi, you didn't watch it, but I'll tell you what Coker said. Coker said that, because he was asked by someone, I think it was John Morgan, you know, how this would affect, thankfully, it wouldn't have been a pay-per-view model because they would have really tanked had that happened. So, and Coker was saying, well, we'll be fine. You know what I mean? Like, this stuff like this happens, and, you know, we've got lots of money. We've been doing fights, promoting fights for years and years and years. But it doesn't look good, right? I mean, you still got to make Viacom happy. And if this kind of thing happens and you miss that, landslide of viewers, that's a major concern, like you were saying. So what do you think about his comments? I mean, he is a promoter after all, right, Nudy?
Well, like I said, it's difficult for me to speak on that because I didn't watch it. that here would be the question I would pose to Scott Coker. And this is the problem ultimately that I have. I understand he's a vested promoter. He's done a lot with Strikeforce. He's done a lot for MMA, which to me makes this one more step of inexcusable. So someone dropped the ball here. Was it him or was it Mitrione? That's all we really need to know. You're right. Viacom, there was a lot of money put in these promos. These promos ran everywhere. You know, it really is what a lot of people consider the greatest fighter of all time returning. And you get this predicament where his opponent backs out, and it's literally, like we talked about before, the last second possible, it seems, to back out. So if this was a known problem, if Matt Mitrione had went to Scott Coker or anyone in Bellator and said, hey, listen, I'm suffering from these kidney stones. There's a minute chance that I feel I may not go. Why in the world would they not have already went to Fedor a week ahead of time and said, listen, you know, we've put a lot of money in this. Your reputation is on this. But Matt's got some kidney stone problems. And right now he feels like he's going to be okay. But the day of the fight, things could change. He may not go. What can we do for you to help this fight continue for the sake of our organization and to preserve our investment in you? Let's get a name of fighters. You pick one, and we'll do whatever we have to do to get one of them here. And we'll come out and we'll announce on Twitter. We'll come out and we'll revamp our promotions and say, hey, listen, this is something that may not take place, but if it's not Matt Mitrione, it's this person. Anything would have been better than what happened. You have to, and like I said, organizationally, you have to throw, someone has to have the blame. It's not throwing someone under the bus. Just let us as fans know. Let us know who it was. If it was Matt, then let it ride on Matt. Because when you talk about how is it going to impact the organization, it's to me only going to impact the organization if it was the organization's fault. If this is something Mitrione just did on his own and didn't tell anybody, then I would think internally it will impact him within Bellator more than anything else. Because how likely do you think they're going to be to main event him, to push him, to work with him going forward, knowing this is what you've just done?
So let me tell you about the timeline that Coker gave for this. And again, this is just a conversation that we were supposed to have later, but this is the way the show is going. So we'll have to broach this again with Anthony, because you said that he's going to want to talk about this too. So maybe we'll let him give his opinion after I interview him quickly when we get him on. Now, here's what Coker said. He said that Matt Mitrione had said something to him at the weigh-ins, that he was having a little twinge in his side. And the next morning when he woke up, about 10 o'clock Pacific time, he was getting noticed that, you know, something was up with Matt. And he said, well, take him to the hospital and let's get it checked out. So then he said that the results didn't come back until about 2:45-ish Pacific time, of course. And then they decided to pull the plug at 3 o'clock Pacific time. So that's what he said. And again, we're going to keep in mind that just like Dana White, is a promoter, and he's going to try to spin this. But what do you think about the timeline? And I know you said earlier on that kidney stones is something that probably should have been seen beforehand, or should have been diagnosed beforehand. So your thoughts?
Well, it's a great question for Anthony. I don't know the process one goes through in weight cutting. I know there's a lot of dehydration. I know there's a lot of physical demand on your liver, your kidneys, your organs, because you're doing something that's very different than hydrating yourself. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, this couldn't have happened or this couldn't have been brought on. I don't know how much. It just, to me, like I said, it's not something that generally just onsets, in my opinion. If he had been getting physicals, if he had been, you know, being checked out, if his diet would have been as contrite as it should be for a professional athlete, I would personally feel that his capabilities of developing a condition of kidney stones would be relatively slim. I mean, this is a guy that's supposed to be sparring constantly, hydrating constantly, not loading himself up with the things we think about that cause kidney stones, like energy drinks, sodas, supplements, whatever the case may be. But the time frame of, well, this is what happened, I don't know how much I trust any of that, because to be quite honest with you, I don't trust the whole circumstance. Because like I said, even if that's to the T what happened, you had notes, so from 10 a.m., you had what, 9 hours, 10 hours minimum to try to sort something out? You have next to an infinite budget in the context of what we're trying to do, which is fly individual A from here to point A to point B. And then if that's the case, why wasn't this approach to the fans so much sooner? If he's in the hospital, does anyone really expect him to cut his, you know, his hospital band off, catch Uber over to the stadium and fight? Of course not. No, I wouldn't expect him to do that, regardless of why he was admitted. But again, it falls back on whose fault is this? If it was yesterday you said something, then that makes it even worse. If you knew the day before, I've got a tinge in my side, okay, then start working. Understand what this show meant to your product and to your namesake. Because listen, these things don't go away quickly. How long do people talk about still the Shamrock Gracie fight? How long do people still talk about the Dada Kimbo Slice fight? You know, these are things that don't just go away. This is going to stain Bellator for a number of years. And ultimately, I would think, if let's just theoretically say, if Bellator shuts down, okay, and I don't want that to happen, but let's say if Bellator shuts down in 2 years or 3 years, you tell me that you can't write the story of them closing down and not include last night as a main character in the event.
Sorry, repeat?
I said if Bellator were to close in 2 to 3 years, how could you write the story of the downfall of this company and not include last night as a key contributor as to the cause and effect? In my opinion, you would not be able to do it. And that's where we are. I mean, I've heard mixed rumors in the industry that Bellator is not in the greatest shape. They're not in the greatest health as a company. You know, they make an incredible investment, more than UFC. I can unequivocally state that. When you look at the video boards, the walkways, the production of what they're trying to make in the arena for the fans, it's far more, just from visuals, it's far more than UFC. So when you're making that type of investment to a visual product, then you better make sure the product you put out is living up or meeting similar expectations. And right now, they're not. Last night, it didn't even happen. And I think you just have to understand. You have to make the distinction, and it's going to be different for everyone. Was last night Bellator's biggest night? Some people may not care about Fedor as much. Some people may say, "Well, this was a washed-up UFC, a never was UFC fighter versus a washed-up heavyweight." And for those people, take your opinion and enjoy it. But to me, this was Bellator's grandest scale. And they dropped it massively.
Now, I think you're correct that this will be, if Bellator were to fold up or, you know, go away, you're right in saying that this would be, you know, something that could contribute to that. I mean, this was supposed to be a home run. And I wanted to bring the conversation back a bit, because when Fedor was questioned about the timeline as well, Fedor said, Coker had said that they didn't tell Fedor until like the day of the fight, right? So of course, what Fedor said was, instead of taking another opponent, he said at that point in time, it's not fair for me to take on a fight. And I agree with him. I don't think that he should have just had to fight whomever, you know, Chael Sonnen straight off the broadcast booth. I hope he brought his jock with him and his mouthpiece. So I don't think that would have been fair for him at all, and I think that Fedor sticking up for himself is kind of what we need to see from more fighters. And of course, he's using the stature that he does have in order to do that. So I think maybe another fighter may have been forced to take a fight, or, you know, really encouraged to take a fight if it wasn't Fedor. So I mean, let's get your thoughts on that. What do you think that, you know, first of all, they didn't tell Fedor until, like, he said about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So that would be 2 hours before they canceled the fight. Pretty short notice, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only other time I could go back and think about something like this happening was Shamrock Kimbo when Petrozelli stepped up. So and that might have been relatively a very close time scale to what happened here. But in my opinion, totally different because, again, we're talking about in that a situation I understand where you're in the back, you're rolling around, you bump your head, blood goes everywhere. So that's not something that you can control. In this situation with Mitrione, it's a diagnosable medical condition. You know, it's different than I slipped and hurt myself. I think LFA or RFA had someone fall in the shower one time and hurt themselves, or maybe that was UFC. I mean, accidents happen. Okay, medical diagnosis is different than an accident. But in that fight, you know, yes, they went out. I think they got Seth, and it was supposed to be, you know, that was the David and Goliath situation. You know, is it unfair to everyone? Yes. Should Fedor have to fight some random jobber that they're going to find in the back? No. But again, it has to go back to where does the organization go? Do they say, listen, you know, we're still going to have to put a product out here. And how much time do you have to plan that? In my opinion, if you're a fighter, you should be ready to fight at whoever, whenever, wherever. So while I agree with the sentiment of it's unfair to Fedor that he didn't get to fight Mitrione, it's also pretty unfair to everyone that bought a ticket, pretty unfair to everyone that was, you know, watched this on TV, that just because Mitrione bails, Fedor doesn't have to fight. You know, and yeah, it's a benefit to everyone else on the card because they get that one step up. But again, to me, everything's going to revolve back around to this time frame. When did they truly know? When did he truly know? And if there's a big enough disparity there, then to me, all the blame is on Bellator. Because at the end of the day, we can sit here and we can think the fighters should be handled however they want. At the end of the day, Bellator is the controlling industry. They're able to say, listen, this is what you're going to do. You're contracted as our fighter. Here is your opponent. Go put on a show. Now, if they don't feel the need to do that based on the circumstances, that's fine. But at the same point, they're the ones that could have controlled much of this. And like I said, if it was anything else, I probably would be more lenient, but it's a pre-diagnosable condition. It's also something, interestingly enough, that you can prove. So with all the heat that's been put on Matt, which, let's be honest, he's been beat up more on Twitter than he would have been in the ring. All the heat that's been put on Matt, all it takes is one x-ray showing the stones to say, hey, listen, I'm not going to be able to go tonight. This is what happened. I mean, granted, I didn't check it today because I think he blocked me, but I don't think that's been put up. And to me, that's a big part of it.
One question that I find interesting that if we get Anthony on, I will ask him because you mentioned it. Someone who has actually cut weight. Wonder if that, and of course, neither of us are doctors, Moody, so it's a moot point for us to say, you know, whether or not the weight cut could have precipitated the onset of the kidney stone. I don't know how it works, and I'm going to take your word for it that, you know, this probably would have come up in his pre-fight medicals had it been an existing issue. Just to put a bow on this before we move back to an earlier topic, I think it was a pretty shrewd move by Bellator to, you know, wait until they did to, you know, get people were still excited to get into the building. And so at least they probably lost a bunch of people not going, but a lot of people probably were like, you know what, we've already set the time and the money aside for this, so we're going to go to this event anyways. We love Josh Thompson, and we're going to, you know, go out and support him. So moving back to the main event Pitbull versus Thompson. Now, a couple of things came out in the post-fight as well, because you had mentioned, you know, Chael not knowing how the fight ended. Apparently, what Josh Thompson was saying, that it was definitely a headbutt that, you know, got him wobbly, got him dazed, and then, you know, the uppercut finished the deal. Now, when cross-examined, so to speak, Pitbull was saying, he came out and said, you know, what exactly what you would think, it, you know, his opponent would say, I didn't know I headbutted him, and Thompson didn't know that I headbutted him until he saw it on an Instagram post in the back. So let's talk about Patricki for a second, because both the Pitbull brothers kind of have a reputation that follows them. I'm not kind of going to go as far as to call them dirty, but, you know, some of these things with, you know, fighting at other fighters at hotels and such. I don't know. What's your feelings on this? And what do you think of the banter that went back and forth at the press conference trying to explain away the headbutt?
Well, I mean, again, I didn't watch the press conference, but now that you've sold it more than the fight, I'm going to have to go back and watch. As far as the Pitbull brothers, to me, you know, they're like a poor man's Diaz brothers, right? I mean, they kind of come out, they kind of say what they want, they have this arrogance about them, and that's what a fighter should have. But when I think about that, the end of that fight, you're in there, you're told right in the beginning, defend yourself at all times. So whether it was an incidental headbutt or not, to me, doesn't change the outcome. If it was an incidental headbutt that put him on the ground, then why wasn't he motioning to the ref more than he maybe did? Because I don't recall him. I guess I do recall him looking over, but I don't recall him making the egregious motions we see when someone's taking a groin shot or someone's taking an eye poke. You know, he really didn't make the mannerisms of, hey, I just got headbutted and now I'm down on the ground because of it. I think he actually stood back up voluntarily. So to me, if that was the case, why didn't you do a better job of accentuating in the ring what had happened until afterwards, when maybe you did see it? Because I think we've all heard from fighters, you know, sometimes, Eddie Alvarez is a great example, sometimes you don't always know what hits you. You know, I think he said that he got hit by Connor at 205 and didn't know what it was, you know, didn't know what hit him. So, true, you know, I guess I could side with Thompson. Maybe he didn't know it was a headbutt. It was a weird way to end the fight. I mean, as he kind of went down to get caught with that uppercut. But, listen, it's not like, in my opinion, he was winning the fight up until then. So, he hadn't dominated the whole fight. Where is he going with this? What does he want from this? Does he want it overturned? Does he want it changed? Does he want people to respect him more because he got, you know, maybe dazed from a legal headbutt? I don't know. But to me, from what I saw, I would be more lenient towards Pitbull's side of things. And yeah, there is a reputation that precedes them. And in my opinion, that reputation probably creates the dialogue you just made of, you know, what's really going on with this? Or is there something more to this happening? But at the end of the day, it's two dudes in a cage to fight each other. Yeah, they're probably going to bump their heads, you know, they're probably going to headbutt each other incidentally once in a while. But when that happens, we've seen it. There's usually a mutual understanding between the two. How many times have we seen somebody take a nut shot and the other fighter step back and say, hey, you know, that's on me? As a matter of fact, a couple weeks ago on the show, we even said, do you need refs here? You know, can't these people almost judge themselves? You know, they know when they do wrong. Yeah. They know when they do right. I would feel like with Patricki having been such a vested fighter, if he had in his mind put all his reputation aside, said, oh, my God, I just headbutted this guy and I could have knocked him out and that's why he's on the ground, I have a feeling he would have known, okay, let me stop here. Let me let the ref come in. Let's get things, you know, resituated, make sure he's okay, and then we'll move forward. As soon as Thompson stands up, well, what is he supposed to do now? Say, wait a second, I know you stood up and I know you're coming at me, but I think I accidentally headbutted you. So lay back down, you know, we'll get the mustache man over here and we'll get things squared back away. It's just that his defense doesn't make any sense.
Ryan, we got Anthony Smith on the phone, so I'm going to bring him in now.
Oh, finally, 15 minutes, Anthony, right?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. Wow.
No, that's okay. That's okay. He gets a little ribbing.
Hey, well, at least I showed up. Unlike my guy.
I showed up. Oh, jeez. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I now know when I go to the airport, I will let you know 15 minutes before I'm going to land to pick me up.
Right. Definitely do that.
Oh, boy.
It's going to take a little bit.
Okay. So, again, the other voice on the phone that you hear is Anthony Smith. Anthony, welcome to AMP Radio. As I said earlier at the top of the show, you can be followed at Lionheart Smith. And, of course, Anthony, you are now fighting as a middleweight in the UFC, correct?
Yes, sir. I am.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to take about 15 minutes, and Moody's going to just kind of put himself on mute for a minute. And we're going to have, on this show, we like to get to know our guests a little bit more so that, you know, our listeners can, you know, go to Twitter or follow you and get more interested in your career. Are you cool with that? And then we're going to get into Mitrione and stuff, because
yeah.
I know Moody said you want to talk about it. Sounds
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
okay.
No, that's fine with me.
So my first two questions are kind of the generic question that we ask every fighter, because as a non-fighter, I kind of find it a little bit nuts that you guys actually want to get in there, stripped to the waist in a cage with another man. So I'm going to ask you, what brought you to MMA?
You know, I was kind of just a troubled kid growing up, and had gotten myself into some trouble, and you know, I don't know, I was drinking a lot, I was fighting all the time, and I walked into a Subway, and there was a flyer for like an amateur fight night, and you know, I kind of looked at it. I didn't really even like, I followed me a little bit, but I wasn't like really, you know, super into MMA at the time. And, you know, I just wanted to get in a fight and not get in trouble for it. And that's kind of what it was. It was just a release at the time. I wasn't able to, you know, I just dropped out of high school and my wrestling career was over. You know, it was something that was really important to me. And it was a way to compete and really just get in a fist fight and not get in trouble for it. So that's kind of how it started.
Now, you said you weren't a huge fan of MMA, but maybe once you got into it a little bit more, were there any fights or fighters that really kind of intrigued you and said, yeah, this is the kind of thing, of course, you always like to get into a good fight, but is this the kind of thing that this is really the kind of thing that I want to do moving forward to, you know, pay my bills?
No, there was never any idea that it was ever going to be a career. And I wasn't even that good when I started. I think I lost my first four amateur fights, you know, like I never even trained. Like back then, it was kind of like the wild, wild west. Like you just showed up to like some bullshit venue and you just signed up and they just matched you up as close in weight as they could. Like there was no weight classes. It was just try to get them as close as we can. And, you know, the UFC hadn't really, at that point, like it had blown up a little bit, but it wasn't super mainstream. So like, I remember watching, you know, obviously I always watched Chuck Liddell and, you know, that was kind of my introduction to the UFC was Chuck Liddell. But like, I used to always watch Rampage and like to this day, Rampage is my favorite fighter. It just, the way that he fought, that's up to what I wanted to do. And, you know, it kind of just blossomed into an accidental career. It wasn't, I had no ambitions of making a career out of it. But once I started training and, you know, I started falling in love with the sport, you know, it just kind of grew from there.
So basically, we bring it back. You've been fighting, because I'm looking at your record right now, and I mean, 37 fights is a lot of fights. You know what I mean? So, and
yeah.
For someone who's only 28, you've got a long
24,
career.
Yeah, I had 24 amateur fights too.
Wow, that is a lot of fights. That's impressive. Wow, crazy.
Yeah, I've been doing this a long time.
So when did you start? You said high school, so you had just dropped out. So you've been doing this since high school, yes? Like, what age did Brown do you think you were when you started?
17. I wasn't even
17.
When I started fighting, I wasn't even old enough to be able to fight. But back then, there wasn't like an athletic commission or anything like that. Like, it wasn't even sanctioned in the state. So like, if you just wrote down your birthday and put it a year earlier than what it actually was, no one fucking checked that. You know what I mean? Like no one was checking IDs. It was just sign up and look and then throw down. You know, like it was so crazy that if there was an odd number of fighters that signed up, the announcer, like the ring announcer, would get into the middle of the cage and he would say, you know, attention crowd, we need someone who weighs between 160 and 210 wow. pounds. And they just pull someone out of the fucking crowd. And then, you know, and then that dude would just throw down, you know, like, you know, this, I mean, people would be drunk and, you know, there'd be old men that just would cut their jeans off at the knee and then just get about it. You know, it was crazy. Like looking back on that, like, and the cage was like on the floor. It wasn't even like, you know, it didn't have like a catwalk or anything. Like it was actually on the floor on top of a wrestling mat. And it was like regular fence, like a chain link fence that you would see in someone's backyard. You know, it was just a tall fence. I mean, it wasn't like a vinyl coated cage. Like it was just regular fencing you would see in the back. Like that was how it started, you know, like, and that's how a lot of shows around the country were, you know, back in 06, you know, it was, you know, you think about 2006 and you think that, you know, like the shows were then the way that they are now. And, you know, 2006 was a while ago, but it's not like the way the shows were back then. It was like, you would think that this was something that was happening in the 90s, you know, but like, it was crazy, man. I kind of miss those days though. I really do. Like back then there was no one got to watch tape on your opponent. No one watched film. You didn't even know who you were fighting. And when you showed up, it was just show up and fight. You know, it was like the truest days of MMA.
Yeah, and I just blows my mind that in 11 years you have, you know, 37, you know, professional fights, and then you said over that in amateur fights, just incredible.
Yeah.
Another thing that I thought was very interesting about your career that I wanted to ask you about, because you've probably got a very unique perspective of having fought in, you know, what I consider the three main MMA promotions as you were coming up. I mean, you fought in Strikeforce. You fought in Bellator, and of course, you fought in UFC, came back again now. What's it been like? I mean, if you feel comfortable, can you compare and contrast, you know, how the three promotions kind of differ? And if you don't feel comfortable with that, that's fine. I basically just want to know, you know, what it's been like to fight in the three major promotions in MMA.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I feel kind of, you're not going to find too many things that make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like sometimes I sit back and other people will say, like, man, you ever like look at your career and like realize that, like, you fought in three of the most other than like Pride and the WEC, I pretty much fought in every major promotion that you can think of. And sometimes I try not to sit back and like reflect too much, because I think in my mind, reflecting is always something you do when you're done. And you know, so I don't really look at it like that, but I do look at, you know, like as far as comparing them, obviously the UFC is the pinnacle of the sport. You know, it's where everyone wants to be. That's where, you know, that's where, you know, if you want to be a world champion, it doesn't matter. Excuse me. It doesn't matter how many world championships you own. You're never going to be a true world champion until you're in the UFC. And that's kind of what's going on with, you know, it's kind of like Fedor's legacy. You know, it's always going to be tainted, because there's always someone going to say, no matter how many prize championships he won, no matter if he goes in and wins the Bellator championship, you know, he was the M1 champion at one point in time, and he's fought in all these places, but Fedor was never the UFC champion. That's always going to taint him, or at least tarnish his legacy a little bit, because people are always going to say that. But as far as comparing them, the UFC is where everyone wants to be, and that is where I want to be, and that's for that exact reason. I want to be the true world champion. When I was in Bellator, it was kind of like Bellator was in a weird – it's not the Bellator you see now. You know, it was 2 or 3 years ago. It's not the Bellator now. But it was in a weird transitional phase. They were transitioning out of that tournament format still going on, but they were, like, trying to phase those out. They were still having, like, weekly shows. You know, I fought in there twice, you know, in my hometown. Bellator wasn't really interested in me at the time. I was coming off a losing streak, you know, and then I come into Bellator and I just wreck people, you know. I'm sure that doesn't sit too well with them. So, you know, they didn't treat me bad, but they definitely didn't, you know, they weren't real interested in me becoming any sort of star or anything like that. But I'll always have love in my heart for Strike Force, man. Strike Force is where, you know, kind of Lionheart, you know, got introduced to the world. You know, I took a fight short notice to get in, and that's, you know, I fought Ben Lagman. It was a guy off of the Bully Beatdown. You remember that TV show with Mayhem, Jason Miller?
Yeah.
I fought him, and that's kind of where I got my start. You know, and I knew that it was owned by the UFC at the time, so that was my end. And you know, I think I fought four or five times for Strikeforce and got moved over to the UFC in my first UFC stint. So I've always had a great relationship with Scott Coker, man. He's a really good dude. He's fair, you know, and he's a fight fan. And I really can't say anything more about – I couldn't say anything greater about a promoter than to say that he's a fan. And that's kind of how Dana White and Scott Coker are. They're huge fans of MMA in general. So, you know, when you got a promoter that's just trying to make money or trying to build his own star or whatever it may be, that's kind of when you run into snakes. But guys like Scott Coker and Dana White are just good-ass dudes because they just truly love the sport. So Strikeforce was a great opportunity for me. It was a great place, and I'm really happy that I came up through Strikeforce, and I'm proud to say that.
Excellent. Okay, so let's one last question, and then we'll get into the events of last night with you and get your opinion, because there's some questions that came up in our conversation earlier that, you know, a fighter can only answer. So your upcoming fight, UFC Fox 24 on April 15th, 2017, and I checked on the website, the UFC website, it's posted there, so I wasn't too sure if it had been announced yet, so it's, I see it here, against Andrew Sanchez. Just give us your thoughts real quick, and how is, I assume you're in camp, so how's it going? Well, maybe not camp yet, maybe not camp yet, right?
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. I've been in camp for about a week now, like hard, actual training camp. I'm feeling good, man. I'm in pretty good shape this far out for the fight. Andrew Sanchez is a tough dude. You know, you can't really take nothing away from the guy. I don't think there's one thing that he does exceptionally great. But I do think that he's kind of the epitome of a well-rounded fighter. He's very good in all areas. I just feel that I'm better. You know, I think I'm better everywhere. You know, obviously he's a great wrestler. He was a Division II or Division III national champion. And he's a great grappler. He's got some good grappling, you know, accolades under his belt. But yeah, I don't think that he's a better grappler than I am. And as far as his wrestling goes, you know, guys that go to D2 or D3, for the most part, are probably guys that I would say 9 times out of 10 are guys that aren't that great as far as takedowns go to be a Division I guy. But they're, you know, they're really good on top, you know. And if you look at Andrew's career, that's kind of what it is. He's not like some super slick takedown artist. He's a control guy, and you know, that's why he was able to do so well as a wrestler, and that's why he's doing so well as a grappler. I'm excited for it, man. It's a good challenge. You know, I think that I need to erase that Cesar Ferreira loss, just so people don't think that I'm just a striker. You know, like my jiu-jitsu is very good, my wrestling's good. I just had a bad night, you know, and it is what it is. But I think that this is the kind of fight that I need to make sure that people know that I'm not just a one-trick pony, you know? Like, I'm not just a striker who can knock people out, you know? I'm also a great grappler, a great wrestler, and I think this is my opportunity. So I think that I sliced through Andrew Sanchez pretty easily. I don't think there's going to be much resistance from him. You know, he'll be a bear to deal with at the beginning, but at this point, everyone in the UFC is. So I don't think that... You know, I do think that this is bad timing for both of us to fight. It's something me and Ryan talked about a lot. I think that as two young guys and two really bright prospects in the middleweight division, I think that this fight could have a whole lot more stakes on it than it would maybe a year from now. You know what I mean? I think that I wish that they would let us kind of just clear out our way to the top. And then once we got there, fight each other, because it kind of sucks. You know, I think we're both two rising stars, and I don't think there's too many people in the division that are going to beat me or Andrew. So it sucks that one of us, you know, obviously one of us has to fall right now. And I'm pretty confident that that's Andrew, but I think even after the fight, I think he goes on and he still, you know, wrecks his way through the division, and we do it again later.
Well, and as Josh Thompson said last night at the beginning or in the press conference, you're a fighter. If you're not coming thinking you're going to win the fight, then you shouldn't be here. So that's great to hear. Great analysis and breakdown. Excited for the fight. But let's give your Twitter out again real quick before we transfer over to Hot Topics. It's at Lionheart Smith. Everybody go on now. Give him a follow. Takes 2 seconds. And I know as junkies, we like to follow up on coming fighters. So this is one you guys should get on real quick. Okay. So let's bring, Ryan back in. Ryan, are you still there? Did you fall asleep?
Absolutely. I fell asleep, but then I woke back up.
Okay. Well, just because you were silent so long, not because, you know, the questionnaire that I was saying was boring or the interview was boring.
It's painful to be quiet. It's painful to be quiet that long.
Exactly.
I bet it is. I bet you had a really hard time not saying anything.
I did. You know me. I did.
So one of the things that came out of this whole fiasco that happened this weekend and in the conversation that we were having, and I'll get your opinion on, firstly, I'll get your opinion on what you thought about this fight dropping out, you know, at the 11th hour, as Moody said earlier on in the show. As a fighter, I mean, kind of strange, right?
Yes, it's really strange. Yeah, it's just a weird deal, man. I don't get too excited about a lot of the fights that Bellator puts on. And that's just me personally. Like, I don't get too pumped up about it. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if the fights that they match up and put on are just fights that don't interest me. Because I watch lots of fights. It just seems like Bellator main events just don't ever really interest me that much. But this one really did. This one was, I was super pumped for this one. Yeah. You know, like Fedor's fighting Matt Mitrione. In my opinion, I thought that Matt was gonna take Fedor out pretty quick. And I wanted to see it, you know. And so that, number one, as a fighter, that sucks for Matt because, yeah, as everyone knows, Matt Mitrione is a money fighter. He likes to get paid. And to have to drop out right before the fight, you already paid for a training camp. You've already spent thousands and thousands of dollars getting ready for the fight, and then right before it, you have to pull out. Like, nobody gets paid, you know. So I don't know if Bellator is taking care of him there or not, but you know, that really sucks that of timing for a kidney stone. That's crazy. But I also think that it just destroyed the Bellator show last night, because I want to be 100% honest with you guys. I was going to watch the fight because I wanted to see Fedor fight. As soon as I heard that Matt Mitrione had to pull off, I didn't even watch the card. Because it didn't matter. So I would be blown away if you were to tell me that the rest of the country didn't do that, or the rest of the world didn't tune in. Like, I know there's lots of people out there like me that just wanted to tune in to watch the whole card, just to watch Fedor fight at the end of it. And they didn't, for the same reason I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what our conversation brought up earlier, correct, Moody? And one of the things that came out of it was that, could the weight cut, if as a fighter, I mean, we've seen other things happen with Johnny Hendricks and such, but can the weight cut precipitate something like a kidney stone, in your opinion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. Weight cutting just destroys people's bodies. I mean, look at Ian McCall. You know what I mean? Like, weight cutting just does some terrible, terrible things to your body, and yeah. That's why I'm happy to see that slowly the commissions and all in the MMA community is kind of trying to weed that out as much as they can. But I'm not sure that really applies here, because I don't think that Matt Mitrione is a big enough heavyweight where he has to cut 265. So I don't know that that really applies in this situation. I'm not sure what he weighed in at, but I would imagine that he's, you know, a small enough heavyweight where he doesn't, because I know I've heard interviews of him saying that if he really wanted to, he could make 205. This is obviously back in his UFC days, but so I don't know what he weighed in at, but I don't think that he cuts weight to make heavyweight.
Wouldn't you think he stays hydrated enough to not have to deal with kidney stones, though?
I mean, you would think so. You would think that as a fighter, you have to, or as a professional athlete in general, you have to I mean, you have to keep yourself hydrated. And one of the things that kind of keeps kidney stones away is extreme hydration. So it's a weird deal, man. Like, professional athletes at this level, like, you don't hear of them getting kidney stones very often, because the way that we have to eat, the way that we take care of our bodies, the amount of water that we intake on a daily basis, like, you just don't hear of it that often. So it's definitely it's a weird deal.
That's the first thing I thought of. I mean, traditionally, you should be at a gallon a day of water. You really should be staying away from, you know, your Red Bulls, your Monsters, your whatever your vice may be. So it's shocking to me that all of a sudden he would get this random kidney stone. And the other thing I mentioned earlier, too, is, you know, the great thing about kidney stones, if there is a great thing, is they're a visual thing. You know, you can see them. So I'm shocked. Let me ask you, if this happened to you, and I guess, in a way, how many times have you ever went into a fight 110%, you know, with zero injuries or zero ailments? If you had something like this happen, wouldn't it be paramount to you to say, okay, you know, I'm going to put out this this X-ray and show these kidney stones so people don't sit here and you know, just derail me on Twitter or wherever? You know, wouldn't it be critical for you to come out and prove that you had a condition?
I absolutely. I think that is one of the most important things you can do if you're going to pull out of a fight, especially if you're going to pull out the day of it. You need to put out doctor's records, doctor's notes, fucking X-rays, whatever you can do, so people don't think you're just ducking fatal, because that's what it looks like. And, you know, me as a fighter, I've never had a kidney stone, but I hear they're pretty terrible. But, I mean, honestly, like, I would try to make it to the cage doubled over with my hands on my stomach if I had to. You know, it's, and maybe it was just that bad and he had to pull out. But, like, as you alluded to, you kind of there. And I know that people say it's none of no one's business. What about, you know, your medical conditions and no one's business? But you put yourself in a position where you're in the limelight and you're in the, you know, you're the one that everyone's watching. So if you pull out of a fight and really hurt a lot of people's pocketbooks, I think you owe it to the fans to prove your case. And, you know, he's not doing that. And, you know, for whatever reason that is, I don't know.
Do we have anything else more on this, or can I rotate to something else? Because I wanted to touch on Koscheck real quick and then kind of wrap up the show as we're nearing the top of the hour. So, Ryan, anything else?
No, I think that pretty much settles it.
Okay. So let's move on to the return of Josh Koscheck and probably the immediate exit of Josh Koscheck. You know, didn't really look all that great and got TKO'd. And this is how the main event started. So, Ryan, let's throw to you. What did you think about Josh Koscheck's return? You kind of touched on it a bit earlier, but let's try to get into it a little bit more. And do you think that he's a one-and-doneer in Bellator?
Well, I would think no, only because they love to huddle around this former UFC talent and really sell them as superstars. And listen, I don't want to take anything away from Josh. Josh is a great fighter. I have great memories of watching Josh fight, but at some point you have to make the determination that enough is enough. And what he was last night is nowhere near what he was 80% of himself in the UFC. He's going to go in there and get himself hurt. It's not that he can't defend himself, but he certainly is taking cumulative damage. I forget who he was supposed to fight. Was it Paul Daly? Was it Paul Daly he was supposed to fight? I mean, that would have been the end. I mean, he went in there and just looks lost. You know, and I know it's been, I think it'll been, what, a year and a half to 2 years? You know, so I'm sure that impacted somehow, but he just literally, I mean, all due respect, he looked like he didn't belong in there. And I don't want to see, as a fan, I don't want to see people hang around until they really hurt themselves. And that's the path that he's going. And I don't know how you're going to sell that going forward.
So, Anthony, my question to you is, as a fighter yourself, to the promotion, is Josh Koscheck worth it? I mean, as Moody had just mentioned, he was booked to be in a huge fight, has had to take 2 years off, comes back and unceremoniously gets TKO'd. is he really worth it to the promotion at this point? As Ryan had pointed out, is that UFC stamp still worth something?
No, I don't think he is, man. I think that, you know, and I don't want to talk, like, as Ryan said, I don't want to talk bad about Josh Koscheck because he's done so much in the sport. But I think the fact that he had to take 2 years off really burned his star out. People forgotten about Josh. I don't even know who he was fighting. So, like, I'm a big Josh Koscheck fan. I had no idea who he was fighting. I just think that his moment is over, you know. And from a couple interviews that I did read the other day, it just sounded like Josh knows that it's over. You know, he's got some successful businesses. You know, he's doing well outside of fighting, you know, and he talks about competing costs him money because he's taking time away from, you know, the companies or whatever he's doing. I just think that, when's the last time you can remember seeing an awesome moment from Josh Koscheck? Because I can't even remember what the last one was, you know. It's just been so long since he's competed, and then when he comes back, he just looks terrible. So, I think that his chin has been, you know, extremely compromised for a long time. Even with his, I think his last UFC fight was against Jake Ellenberger, I believe. I think, and you know, he didn't look good there either. You know, so it's really sad to see. But I think that it's time that, you know, not even just for Bellator, but I think it's time that Koscheck hangs him up and kind of jumps on the horse and sails away.
Okay, guys. As I said, we're going to try and wrap it up, but one quick last question. Chet Congo got an impressive win tonight, and as Ryan, you alluded to earlier, pretty much the best fight on the fight card. And basically what I want to get from both of you is, first of all, Moody, let's get you to comment on that fight, how it was, and then to both of you, if you were fighting a former teammate, and Chet Congo seemed very, very upset that this fight had even been made, would you be as upset and really take great pleasure in, you know, kind of knocking that fool out, Moody?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for that mindset, but I will tell you one thing. He felt it was disrespectful that the fight got signed to begin with. He walked to the cage, got completely blank. I mean, very strange. His expressions and mannerisms throughout the entire evening, even after he had won in just fairly dominant fashion, it's strange to know that you can compete even at that level. And we know it's not the highest level. Let's not kid ourselves. But it's odd that you can compete at that level and absolutely take nothing from a win. There was no pleasure for him in any of that. And it's strange that Bellator, if that's how he's acting in the public, if that's how he's acting pre and post fight, it's odd to me that they would have continued to push that fight. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, as a professional, you can say that Chet Congo was given a task. He went in, he took the task, he completed it, and that was the end of it. I'm sure in his heart, if he really felt that bad about fighting him, he wouldn't have wanted to do it. But unlike a kidney stone, you know, he wasn't going to allow that to prevent him from getting in the task at hand. So it was an entertaining fight. I don't like to see one-sided fights like that. I guess if you're a Chet Congo fan, you enjoyed it, but it is only strange to see a fight go so much one way, but even more so strange to just to go back and analyze the way he reacted. And not that Chet Congo is the most animated fighter on the planet, but he really just did act withdrawn emotionally from the entire event. It's going to be hard for them to push him as a promotion afterwards. It's not like he called anybody out. It's not like he was just kind of ho-hum the whole time. Very, very odd to see that from any fighter.
So, and Anthony, same question to you. I mean, as a fighter, if you had to fight someone that you had previously been a teammate with, would it be something that would give you motivation?
No, I think that that's a tough situation. As MMA fighters, especially, you know, at a high level, you know, that these guys are and that I'm at, you invest so much in your teammates and you spend more time with these people than you do with your own families. I mean, it's, you travel together, you eat together, you train together, you know, it's really a family environment. I mean, it's it's kind of hard to explain, but like like I just said, like I spend more time with my coaches and training partners than I do with my own family during training camp. So that would be tough, you know, and it really depends on how Czech felt about it, you know, whether they had a conversation before the fight was signed, you know, they get the offer, like, you know, what do? Like, you know, I'm really good friends with Chris Camozzi. Both of us are middleweights in the UFC. And we've talked several times, like, what do you do when they call and they say, we want you to fight, you know, this card, this date, and here's your opponent, and it's Chris Camozzi on the paper. Like, what do you do? Like, do you not take it? Do we not feed our families? Do we not continue our careers? Do we not keep pushing to the top? Or do we let Dana or whoever, whether it be Dana or Scott Coker, whoever, smear us all over the media because we won't fight each other? You know, like, what do you do in that situation? So what I would imagine you do is you pull yourself emotionally out of it and make it a job. And that's something that's not fun or easy to do because, you know, we love fighting and we love what we do for a living. You can't do this if you don't love it. So if you have to spend a whole training camp not loving it and pulling yourself emotionally out of it, that's got to be tough, you know, and being angry. I'm sure that he was angry with the promotion because I'm sure that wasn't his first choice and who he wanted to fight, you know, and who got the call first. You know, that's the things that people don't think about. Like, you know, if me and Chris they line us up to fight, no one thinks about who had to say yes first. Because someone gets the call before the other person. But, you know, they can't call both at the same time. So, like, now you're looking at your friend, like, kind of sideways. Like, so if they call me and they say, we want you to fight Chris, well, my first question is, what did Chris say? You know, because then that really changes the relationship. Yeah. You can't fight someone and then have the same relationship with them that you had before. That no matter what people say, it's not just a job. Like, you go in there and you genuinely have to try to hurt them. And I don't care what anybody says. They want to call it a sport. They want to say it's competition. It's a fucking fight. And, you know, like, you got to go in there and you got to cut his throat the first chance you get because he'll do the same to you. You can't sit down and have a normal meal with the person after that happens. You just can't. It changes the scope of that relationship forever. So, you know, that would be my first question. Like, you know, what did he say? Because if he said, do you want to fight him, fuck him. You know what I mean? Like, now you're mad. Now you're mad because your buddy didn't even call you first or whatever that may be. But no one thinks about that stuff. Like, it's a weird deal, you know? Like, you have relationships with other people that are now going to be compromised and they're going to be weird, you know? Like, it's not like they just train with each other, you know? Like, so now they have training partners that they may or may not still talk to and have a relationship with and eat dinner with their families and stuff. You know, like, that's a weird deal that in the Bellator division, there was other options. And it just sucks that, you know, like, fighters always say, you know, I don't want to fight my teammate unless it's for a title. Well, this is the furthest thing from a title. You know what I mean? It's not even like it was a contender fight. It's not even like it was, they really even gave a shit about, you know? So it's weird that they would do that to him. And I'm sure that that's why he was so, you know, emotionally drawn and pulled away from that fight, you know, because I'm sure he's mad at the promotion. He's mad at himself for having to do it. He's mad at his teammate for having to do it too. You know, it's a weird deal.
Yeah, apparently the story behind that is that the promotion had was just some shady dealings there to get them both. You know, they told the one and the other that they had accepted it, and when they hadn't talked to both of them yet. Anyways, I won't get into it because it's time to go. Anthony, I wanted to thank you very, very much for joining us today on AMP Radio. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Let's go ahead and give out your Twitter one more time, at Lionheart Smith. And just a reminder, everybody, you can see Anthony coming up, UFC on Fox 24, April 15th. I think it's from Kansas City. Am I correct?
Kansas City. It's 2 hours away. Pretty close to home.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you again. And it's a pleasure. And hopefully we can have you on again in the future. You were great to talk to.
Thanks, man. Whenever you guys want, I'm always willing to talk MMA.
All right. Thank you very much, and have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Cheers. All right, Mr. Moody, we did it. We made our way through, and I forgot to mention at the top of the show that unfortunately Vegas Ford was not able to join us as well, so we missed Tony. We missed Vegas Ford. Moody, at Shutdown Safety, I saw on Twitter the other day that you've got some pretty interesting things going on in the other line of your life, work career. Do you want to talk about that at all? Are you interested in speaking on that?
Oh, you know, I mean, I guess even what drew me and Anthony together was, you know, just personalities on YouTube and things like that. So, yeah, a lot of good things going on with some football companies I work with. They're doing a great job of putting out spectacular football games, and I'm privileged enough to be able to work with a number of these people and share their products. And as passionate as I am about MMA, I'm just as passionate about football. So it's good to see that, you know, here in a couple months, we're going to have some new football games on the market. I'm going to get to go out and watch my buddy fight. Everything's right in the world, in my opinion.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, you're heading out to Kansas City as well, correct?
Yes, I will be there. Well, you know, I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure. I'll have to call Capital One and see what we can do. I might make the trip to both. But the problem is they're back-to-back weekends. And although the money really wouldn't be that, you know, too big of a deal, it's the time from work. You know, back-to-back, I mean, it's going to be literally from Tuesday to, from Wednesday to Sunday for Kansas City. You know, it's hard to do. I don't want to come back and feel like I should have never left.
No, I feel you, man. I feel you. I mean, just me going to the one show is going to be costly enough for me. So here's what I wanted to ask you. I'm thinking of doing Proteus's primetime show tomorrow because the UFC fights are tonight. And, you know, if we don't react to them, we may not get an opportunity to. So I would really like to react to the fight. I have booked right now Showtime from Tennessee. If you're interested in a spot tomorrow talking over the UFC fight, probably later in the night, maybe around 9 Eastern time, let me know. You know, I'll leave it with you. You think it over. But that's pretty much what I'm planning on doing.
Oh, no, I'm game. Yeah, I mean, if you need me, text me and I'll be here.
Okay, well, we'll make it done then. And we'll probably do, like I said, around 9 o'clock. Eastern Standard Time, and that it'll be you, Showtime from Tennessee, as it stands right now. So thank you very much, and I'm going to let you go, get off, get addled, get back to the rest of your day. At Shutdown Safety, as I said, if you got anything else in parting, please feel free.
No, I think I'm all good. I guess I'll talk to everybody tomorrow night after the undisappointing UFC card. It can't get much worse than Bellator, so at least we'll look forward to a decent set of fights tonight.
Awesome. Thank you very much again for joining me, and have a great day.
You too.
And just like that, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, we did it just like that.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.